dbkmediaservices.com. You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk Podcast. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. Now, here are your hosts for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk, Shane Combs and Jeremy Ward.
Hello, SVC fans, and welcome to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk podcast show. This is Shane Combs of SVCSportsZone.com. I'll be joined by Jeremy Ward here in just a second, but I want to take you back to the end of last week's show as we were building up for this particular show, which will be our final show until the new year. We were saying that the website had an idea for something that we thought would really grab the interest of just about everybody who has ever or still has something to do with the Side of Valley Conference. And last year, you'll remember we did some things in basketball where we were picking an all-time team. This year, we want to take a look at the Mount Rushmore of the SVC. And when you think back of Mount Rushmore and where that cliche takes place in sports and really entertainment, and people talk about the Mount Rushmore of this or that and picking the people who have maybe influenced that particular thing the most, and you think George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and then Roosevelt and Lincoln and what that represents, well, to utilize that analogy here in the Side Valley Conference, we're asking you over the 50-year history, what four faces would make up our Mount Rushmore of the SVC? And if you have a particular area of where maybe you're a little bit more knowledgeable, you could always send your votes in and do it per sport. You could do a Mount Rushmore of SVC coaches. What we basically want to do is turn it over to you, the fans. We'd like to see you, the fans, use the DBK Media Service website number 740-569-3254 and simply leave some names on the voicemail and maybe a little sales pitch on why you think that person would be one of the four faces that would end up being on the final Mount Rushmore of the SVC. So again, take advantage of that, 740-569-3254. Really excited about this. If you are familiar with the show last year, it's not just about putting those four faces and honoring them. Usually what you'll find is throughout all of the debate is we end up just kind of honoring and kind of getting some names out there to listeners of all ages in terms of honoring our great conference from start to present day. So real excited about that. And on that note, I want to welcome Jeremy to the show. And Jeremy, I'll tell you what, I think this is going to be a really fun show. We put you in the officiating hot seat here in a little bit. But first, we had a fan call in this week with a really basketball intelligent comment and question.
This is for SBC Sports Zone Podcast. First, I'd like to thank you guys for what you do for the league and the kids in the league. I think the website's great and the podcasts are awesome. But in the first cast, Jeremy mentioned having the challenge of having two different age groups and that have ability, and as a coach, being able to balance that those groups without alienating either group. I think it also create some challenges from a coaching standpoint, knowing which situations suit each group yet best. I thought the Zane Trace Union game was a perfect example last Saturday when you watch some of the younger players from Zane Trace thrive at home in their environment, and some of the younger kids for Union seem to struggle a little bit down the stretch with the student section and the crowd seemingly on top of them. I thought maybe you guys could give a little insight, talk a little more in depth on this. We've got some young, talented players in the league this year, as well as some senior groups with a lot of varsity experience. So if you guys want to talk about that a little bit, I think it'd be great for the show.
Well, we appreciate the phone call. What a great comment and question here. Again, that's 740-569-3254. Jeremy, we do have a mix of young and old, and we have talked a lot about how, you know, the home court plays a role, just different things throughout your program play. Lord, what would be some of your thoughts as you listen to that phone call on these teams mixing young and old?
Oh, well, you know, really, really great call there. We appreciate that. It's always great to have the fans kind of dictate what we discuss on the show. Sticking to that, it's very easy to start at that Zane Trace Union Yoda game, and I think he pretty much summed it up. you know, with the atmosphere, those are the things you look for. That early in the season, it wouldn't have at all surprised me had all the young players in that game and that atmosphere and that environment struggled a little bit. That wasn't the case, and that's really what makes that stick out as one of the top games of the year so far. But you know, you can look to a lot of other teams now that we're four games into the conference season. Huntington kind of falls into that mix. Southeastern falls into that mix. The teams that maybe have lost a key player or two and have to mix in some youngsters, and the different types of games that those teams end up playing, maybe Friday night to Saturday night. And I thought a great point from the call was the coaching standpoint. You have to recognize that. Are your younger players going to have a little more fatigue? Did your veterans carry on Friday night? And are they going to be supportive enough to push the youngsters on Saturday night when maybe they're going to need them to hit some shots from the perimeter and take some pressure off them? So just a great call. And all in all, I think you can talk about half the league in this discussion.
Well, Jeremy, on the coaching aspect of that, it's interesting because sometimes you get into situations. Obviously, young kids, if they're on varsity, are very talented, or they wouldn't be there in the first place. But then you get down to situations. Sometimes a situation might call for someone to go in on a free throw and just box out and rebound, or someone to go in and set a good screen, or maybe you have a quick hitter that you trust, a three-year player, to go to the right spot and execute in a hostile environment, or to come off and catch the ball on the wing and triple threat and make a post feed. So there's so many different things that go into time and score and substituting, and I think that's what makes this so tricky. The one thing I wanted to get your opinion on, Jeremy, before we move on, let's talk about putting the freshman on varsity, or even a sophomore, I guess, for that matter, and how we decide. I guess one of my philosophies always was I look for a kid who was ready to start playing his varsity role when I moved them up. And what I mean by that is, if I had a sophomore who I was really looking to be one of my top couple scorers in as a junior and senior, and I thought by putting them on varsity as a sophomore was only going to allow them to have 2, 3, 4 shots a night, I thought that was maybe a situation that wasn't really fair to them. Whereas sometimes if you have a defensive stopper or a point guard or just a rebounder, and they're ready to do that as a freshman or sophomore, perhaps it was time to pull the trigger on them and bring them on up. What was some of your philosophies as a coach on how you decide when a kid was ready?
Well, those are some interesting points. And it is tricky. And having the opportunity to coach at the varsity level in both boys and girls, you had a different set of circumstances. On the girls' side, a lot of times physically, the freshman girls were just,
yeah, good point. Yep.
Just fine. I mean, they weren't there. There's not the gap between, maybe the 14 or 15 year old girl and the 18 year old girl that there is on the boys' side. So from a physicality standpoint, it wasn't usually the case. If they have the skills, or they had the ability to help your team, it was an easy call. But with boys, no matter how skilled, it still can be tricky. And like you said, can you put them in a situation where they can be successful and in a situation that's going to help them and help the program in the long term? If you've got a kid that's a point guard and he's going to be your point guard, are you going to move him up to play minutes at the two to make him more versatile? Or are you willing to only let him play 1 or 2 minutes a quarter at his position? Those are things that you really have to decide. Or, maybe it has to do with the overall status of your program.
Right.
Sometimes it just depends on what
Don't you think sometimes you'll get a kid that he might be your sixth or seventh best player in your program, but as a seventh man, if he's a freshman, he's only playing, say, 12, 13 minutes a night, that's not enough without playing JV. Don't you think that happens as well sometimes, as we bring a kid up and then they end up not getting enough minutes?
I do. But on the flip side of that, sometimes I see, kids stay down at the JV level and play roles that are not really suited for them. Maybe they have to score a bunch for the JV team and handle the ball, but that'll never be the role at the varsity level. So, right. Maybe they don't develop as much as you think they might, just because having the experience in the game time minutes.
Right, right. Well, good stuff all the way around. Really appreciate that call. Fans, let us know more on that, 740-569-3254. And obviously, it's going to be impossible to talk about boys and girls basketball this year without talking about this because it is such a factor in our league. Well, Jeremy, let's continue some basketball discussion by looking at the boys' side, where we learned quite a bit, in my opinion, about a few teams this weekend.
Grandma got run over by a reindeer walking home from our house Christmas Eve. You can say there's no such thing as Santa, but as for me and Grandpa, we believe she'd been drinking too much eggnog.
SBC fans, we move into boys as Bruce gets us in the holiday spirit here. And as we look at the scoreboard, the Good Health Chiropractic Center SBC boys basketball scoreboard. And of course, the good doctor is located 231 East 2nd Street, Chillicothe. You can call 773-GOOD for an appointment. Appreciate his sponsorship. And you can always go back, look, CNK Athletic Equipment Archives, which is right there at the top of the scoreboard if you need to go back and see scores from the past. And then, of course, our Valero standings gives you the update on where all the teams stand. Valero is all over the side of Valley Conference. That's the All-American Gasoline. You have South Paint, Kingston, Southeastern, Bourneville, Western Avenue, and Bridge Street. So great sponsorship. Lets the fans know everything they need to know. So Friday night, I started out looking for what I thought would be the best game, and I'll tell you what, I really picked a good one. I was out at Southeastern, and Westfall was coming to town, and Westfall jumped out 11-2, and to be honest, the first quarter ended up being the entire difference in this game because it kind of gave Westfall the cushion they needed to keep the tempo in their favor. Southeastern really turned up the tempo, Westfall becoming very uncomfortable handling the basketball. They had it down to 2 at the half, a really close second half. Got it to overtime, and then Westfall grabs a little bit of the lead and then does a nice job making some free throws down the stretch. Following the instant classic at Southeastern Friday night, I caught up with Westfall head coach Matt Carson.
Well, Coach, it was a crazy one tonight, but I guess anytime you come on the road in this league and get a win, you'll take it.
Well, I got introduced really quick last week in the Scioto Valley Conference basketball, and I'm going to tell you, and this is no disrespect to the Southern Hills Athletic Conference, a lot of good teams and coaches there, but it is an absolute war. And Kyle and Matt Hoops and Shu and all these guys I've talked to have told me how much of a war it is every night, and I believe it. I mean, there's no off night in this league. When you play 14 league games every year, you're going to battle every night, and this is just another classic SBC battle tonight.
Well, we've been doing a lot of fair, unfair type questions where the fans have been emailing into the inbox. As I get a chance to see you guys tonight and look at some of your other scores, would it be fair to say tempo might be the number one factor in terms of your success throughout the year?
Yes, and the kids are starting to buy into that. There were actually times tonight I told my guards where I was thinking, you know, we had some fast break opportunities and we didn't take advantage of them because they're being patient like I'm telling them to do. So I got to quit giving them maybe some mixed signals like that. But our guards, I thought our guards stepped up tonight. I don't know what their scoring totals were, but I know David Robinson, Cody C., John Thomas all hit big free throws there at the end. And that's what I told the guards. I said, guys, in this league, we can attack the basket and get to the free throw line. And I thought they did that at times tonight. And if we control the tempo, get into our two big guys and play off them, I think we can be successful.
Well, real quick, moving forward, Coach, tell me a little bit about Alex Stonerock now that you had a chance to work with him through the offseason, into the preseason, now the regular season. Just tell us a little bit about his game.
Well, that's a funny thing because, you know, I had heard all kinds of great things about Stonerock, and you know Stonerock's an excellent baseball player. I've only got a chance to see him play
I
once.
I know that way too
yeah,
well.
Yeah, only got a chance to see him play once, and I really didn't see him until open gym starting the fall. But just in the first conversation I ever had with Alec, I realized this kid is a 30-year-old in an 18-year-old's body. Very mature kid, very level-headed, very grounded, and just kind of sometimes just a goofball. I mean, great. I mean, just brings the team together with his camaraderie and stuff. Can't say enough about him. I mean, a lot of good things, not just with his play on the court, but he's a very good person and very good student, so I'm just very impressed with him.
I appreciate you joining me. Good luck the rest of the way out.
All right, thanks, Shane. Appreciate it.
Again, that's Coach Carson, Westfall Mustangs. I'll tell you, Westfall, solid basketball team. They definitely have some weaknesses, but overall, this is going to be a little bit of a sleeper in terms of a team who's going to continue to get some of these top teams throughout the year. They've got a top five scorer. You could even argue a top five player in Stone Rock and some other nice pieces in terms of size and athleticism around him. So again, Westfall wins the overtime thriller. And Jeremy, I guess when we look Friday night, Dina takes a little bit of a baby step up 19-18 over Piketon before Piketon just explodes really in the third quarter later on to pull away. Zane Trace rolls behind Henney out of Paint Valley. Uniota finally gets the Tillion off a little bit and for a big night to beat Huntington, kind of hold them off as Huntington was starting to come back. What were some of your thoughts on the Friday night recap before looking ahead to Saturday?
Well, originally, as I was on the road coming back Friday night, I was checking out the scores, and, you know, at first glance, you know, I didn't see what Adina did in the first half. So, you know, it was Saturday morning before I actually got to break down that game and the statistics and see what they're able to do before Piketon eventually took over. But, you know, initially I was very impressed, you know, with Henty's game. Just another example of how dangerous that Zane Trace offense is. If you decide to shut one thing down, they have a lot of weapons, and the continued play of Hutton at the point guard, distributing the ball and making good decisions and getting everybody involved. And then again, I thought, you know, the Uniota-Huntington game, potentially, you know, if Huntington was able to create enough havoc and maybe get a big game from their guards, I thought maybe they had a chance to make that game interesting, and they certainly were able to do that. But, you know, as we looked into Saturday coming off Friday's games, and, you know, you and I talked on the phone in the middle of the day Saturday, you know, one of the things we spent a lot of time talking about was the kind of potential for that Southeastern Piketon game. You know, how is Southeastern going to react after Friday night's loss? Were they going to kind of be you know, maybe stung by that loss, you know, and I mentioned how, you know, they've kind of had trouble shooting. Maybe that was the night they were going to go down and just, you know, really shoot the ball well and bring the intensity and maybe get that win that has eluded them so far, as they've kind of struggled to put a whole game together. You know, and Piketon had really kind of prove their resolve and their veteran leadership as they won a tough non-league game Tuesday night after trailing most of the way, and then
a good Lucasville Valley team.
Very good team, and you know, and then kind of fighting off a tough start against Adina. So, you know, we kind of thought that game might be interesting and could go a lot of different ways. So, you know, turns out we were right in that regard, and you know, that obviously was an amazing game.
Well, on the all-day event there Saturday at all the four locations, I was over at Huntington and had a chance to see Adina. I tell you what, Coach Smith and his staff there, Coach Easterday, Coach Day, who played for me at Paint Valley when I was with Coach Kearns, a super player, super person. I tell you what, they're doing a really, really good job. They had come into Huntington, I thought, with just a really good scheme, really good plan. And they were in that thing pretty much all the way to the end. Even the final score is just a little deceiving. It was more of a what I would call maybe a 7 or 8 point game, where Adina would get it to down to 4 or 5, and it would go back to 9 or 10, and just really impressed. But at the same time, I tell you what, you have to give Huntington a lot of credit, because I didn't mention there, in fairness to them, and giving up the big night to the Tillion. Brian Hall is out right now for Huntington. He was hurt earlier in the week, and he was in a boot all weekend, and I'm not sure of the extent of that, but obviously they're already somewhat of a wouldn't say short team, but they're a little bit undersized, but without him they become a much shorter basketball team compared to the top half of the league, and but they still have some great quickness. And Bryce Vickers with just another, I tell you, that's the second Huntington home game I've watched, and Vickers has been in double figures in the first quarter, and it's really just set the tone for the Paint Valley and the Adina win. Then Zane Trace goes up to Westfall, they fall behind 6 at halftime and they win. Uniota really rolls over Paint Valley. And then, as you mentioned, Jeremy, the Piketon Thriller. For the fans who didn't hear, and I appreciate Coach Urich taking the time to really talk to me on the phone Saturday night and fill me in, I was kicking myself for not going down to that one. The way I understood it was Dylan Miles drives and scores 7.6 seconds, I believe it was. And then, you know, as you expect your player of the year candidate to do, Piketon comes down, they execute, and Moore, Craig and Moore, who came into the weekend leading the SVC and scoring at 20 a game, hits a big-time shot. In fact, I know Coach Urich won't mind me quoting him here. I think the way Coach Urich was describing it to me is he felt like his guy was right there defensively, and if I remember his words correctly, he said Moore hit a player of the year type of shot. So must have just been a big-time atmosphere, big-time shot, and a great ending. So, Jeremy, before we move into the fast breaks, just some of your final thoughts from Saturday or the weekend in general.
Well, I think, Coach Carson may have said it best. Just the fact that you really shouldn't be surprised when you pick up the paper or when you listen to the radio, maybe one of the games you missed or one of the games you weren't thinking about turns into an amazing contest, because that's what you're going to get in this conference, and kids that know each other really well and coaches that know their teams and the other teams really well, you're just bound to get great games every single weekend.
Well, Jeremy, let's move on to our fast break. The C&K Athletic Equipment, located out of Circleville, they're the sponsor of our fast break. And fans, as always, Jeremy will take the lead, and I will follow up. So without further delay, let's get out in transition. Let's go to the boys' fast break.
With this week being the first release of our Dena Sports Medicine SVC leaders, what jumped out at you when looking through the numbers on the boys' side?
Some things that jumped out to me, relatively low numbers of threes, things that I've noticed watching in games, that the three-point shooting's kind of been down, kind of the absence of Zach Farmer and his statistical impact so far, at least in terms of scoring and rebounding. I think you'll see that change. But probably the biggest thing that I noticed is the number of free throw attempts that Piketon has taken. No surprise with Farmer and Bradson and Moore being the only players in the conference last year to attempt 100 free throws. They've got five players on the list averaging basically four trips to the line a game, which is far more than any other team in the league. And just tells you how dangerous they are, the way they can attack the rim from, you know, different positions, and the way they attack the offensive glass. It just really makes it difficult on the rest of the league to, you know, upset them.
Well, I tell you what, that's some good stuff with Piketon there. I looked at two things, Jeremy. One, I know we talk a lot about Beam and Dottillion with their points and rebounding, but two guys that are really going to take their teams to different levels if they continue to play where they're at is Jordan Allen of Southeastern, Connor Smith of Zane Trace. And along the Zane Trace line, Eric Hutton averaging around 8 assists. I think he had 10 again in another game this weekend. And Beam and Mowry and Smith. And then obviously Henney just had 27, so his average is going to climb. So a great point guard play, getting a lot of different guys involved there. Zane Trace, really dangerous basketball team.
This week's inbox continued to ask fair or unfair. After Shane was somewhat tough on the point guard play last year, this year's floor generals are really the strength of the league.
Well, my initial thought here was unfair just because of some of the big games and the big potential of the post players in the league. But as you look at each team in the conference, nearly every team has improved at the point from last year. Even at Uniota, where they lost Murray, Kyle Strange has ended up being one of the most consistent scorers so far in the conference. So I'll have to say fair.
Well, Jeremy, I kind of looked at it the opposite way. When I was first reading the question, I was ready to say fair because I thought it was going to talk about the improvement. But I would have to say unfair when we start talking the strength. Again, I'm not saying we don't have improvement. Obviously, Brapson can really play. Miles, Hutton, Akello, Strange, some young kids around the league. But I'll tell you, I even saw Thomas of Adina the other night, going to be a really good one. But I think it would be a little unfair to call it the strength when you start to consider your top, say, 5 to 10 players.
And looking at the Valero standings halfway through the first round, do you see a team's position that surprises you in some way?
Not really. You could look at Southeastern and Huntington, but it's very likely that they could have mirroring records. by the halfway point just because of their schedule and the difference in their schedule. And, you know, their head-to-head matchups with each other may end up telling who wins that spot. And, you know, Zane Trace, they still have the toughest part of their schedule ahead of them, but they certainly answered a bell so far. But overall, I'm not really surprised.
Well, I like what you said there, Jamie, because when you're doing this after four games, you obviously have to be really picky. So sometimes it might just be by one game that surprises you a little bit. Obviously, for Zane Trace to get Uniota early in the year and for them to be undefeated, I'd have to say that was a little surprising to me. I agree with you on the schedule of Huntington Southeastern, but at the same time, with Huntington, probably if I'm being honest, I had Southeastern ahead of Huntington in my mind in the preseason, but now you have Huntington goes on the road to Westfall and wins. Southeastern loses in overtime at home, so it's early, but at the same time, if I'm going to answer this question after four games, I'd say that surprises me a little bit.
In looking at the Embroidery schedule, Tuesday is the first of two meetings between the two preseason favorites. What will be the key when Uniota visits Piketon?
I look at limiting penetration defensively. As athletic as this game's going to be, you know, can Uniota get to the free throw line on the road? Last year, they jumped out early, scored 20-some points in the first quarter, and then they, you know, attempted a ridiculous amount of perimeter shots the rest of the game and allowed Piketon to overcome the early deficit. Piketon's definitely going to look to get to the rim and to the free throw line to neutralize the Sherman's pressure. So I really look at that as being the key.
Well, Jeremy, people who know me know that I love stats. I love to break down the game, and I really think this is going to be a possessions game. When we start talking the turnovers and rebounding, I think it was you, Jeremy, that made the point about Uniota on the offensive glass at Zane Trace. As bad as they were playing, it just seemed like they kept finding a way to get extra possessions. Piketon the same way. I heard they had the 20 offensive rebounds against Westfall earlier in the year. So when I think of possessions and who can get easy points, both of these teams very comfortable playing in the 60s. And in fact, they'd probably rather play high 60s than they would say low 50s. So should be a lot of fun to watch. Looking forward to going down. Well, in our next section here, Jeremy, I tell you, this is what I was looking forward to. It's another what I was talking about last week a little bit. It seems like I cannot eat lunch, or I cannot go to a game, or even when you and I sit together and we talk, and I'll ask different things, and you always give me an interesting perspective, maybe from the official side. So I got to thinking, why not just go ahead and include this in the show? So fans, we are going to have our segment here where we put Jeremy on the hot seat a little bit, and I need a little help from the fans here again to help me name the segment. Again, I threw out the phone number earlier, 740-569-3254. When you're calling in your question for Jeremy as an official, maybe throw out a name for us. We have thrown around some names as Zoom In on the Zebra. We've had the word flagrant and technical from a couple of my friends thrown around, and maybe kind of throwing those and playing off of those words somehow. Or then my personal favorite, perhaps the most honest, the liar, liar, stripes on fire. So I thought I would go ahead and get us started. I'll play the role of the fan this first week, and then fans, again, you can call that number, and you can call in your question, and we'll pick out some of the best every week for Jeremy to help us out with. But Jeremy, my question this week is a player getting in foul trouble. Okay, let's say you show up at a game, and even if you're driving an hour away and you do not know the teams as well, but obviously some of these guys that we have in the SVC, they've been around the SVC for 20 years. They know who the players are, and they know the different things. And even if you show up and you see the big 6'5 kid jumping center, you probably figure, oh, he's pretty important to their team, just as a basketball person. My question would be, when a player gets in foul trouble, is an official aware of that? Or like even another example would be a guy, a key player or a girl playing with four fouls in the fourth quarter. When you're going up and down and you're watching the contact, you're an intelligent fan and coach and just a person of the game. Is that something that you are aware of, or are you really able to block that out?
Well, I don't know if you can block it out. You know, I think it's obvious to anybody that's attended very many basketball games that, you know, they already dress the officials so that they are, you know, the point of emphasis, so to speak, of the game. So, you know, they're going to get a lot of attention. But no, seriously, the way the coaches, I mean, the coaches are going to let you know that that guy has two fouls. The fans are certainly going to let you know that the first two fouls were called on their star player or not called, as you'll see. You know, everybody thinks that the star players get special treatment, like, you know, like the NBA or whatever, the so-called, you know, Michael Jordan officiating. But in all honesty, you have to concentrate on your area and your responsibilities. And the most difficult thing about officiating, you know, are the details. You know, as weird as it sounds, when you're watching an area and then you got to call a foul, you got to sort through this information as you're under the table and remember which player is supposed to shoot the free throw and which number of the player you're, you know, reporting the foul on when you get to the table. So there's so many things that go through your mind. I can't say that how many fouls does that kid have in that split second when I'm blowing the whistle and raising my hand. It really doesn't come to my mind.
And it's really been helpful for the two of us to sit at games, and I'll ask things, and you will open my eyes to things I never thought of in terms of, you know, I know sometimes as a coach, I'll be mad, and I'm just looking for anybody to ask, and, you know, and I'll go ask this person, and they'll say, honestly, I wasn't in my area, I wasn't even watching it. Well, as a coach, you just think that's a cop-out, but from what you're telling me, why don't you share that with the fans, what you're telling me, if the guy's doing his job, that really is true.
Oh, yeah, you know, there's really only one official watching the basketball, so you have to imagine the other two guys are locked in on their area, and you know it's all peripheral as far as the ball comes to their area, they pick it up. So the player's numbers or some of that, I think it really is not as obvious as you think it is from the stands when you get to see the total picture. It's almost the equivalent of, you know, watching the game, you know, blocking one eye or whatever. You know, you're really only locked in on one area. And your focus is not always the focus of everybody else sitting in the stands that, you know, are watching the ball.
Well, I'll tell you, that's good stuff. I think this is going to be a fun segment again.
I'm sure it's going to be really fun for me. Yeah.
And in fairness to Jeremy, I tell you, Jeremy, if you ever have something that you think can add to that segment, we won't let the fans just drill you. Sometimes you can educate all of us too. So,
I certainly enjoy it, and I feel like I have the right demeanor to be an official, because I'm definitely not too fool myself in terms of my abilities. I work really hard at it when it's there, but I definitely don't take myself too seriously. You know, you're going to make mistakes, and everybody's going to let you know.
Again, fans, that's 740-569-3254. Really looking forward to that segment throughout the basketball season here. Well, Jeremy, let's shift gears to the girls' side. It was a now or never week for the Lady Pioneers while Dina and Uniota continued to roll. Well, just like on the boys' side, when it comes to girls' basketball, we have the same features. You'll get your Good Health Chiropractic SVC girls' basketball scoreboard, as well as your archives page from CNK Athletic. The Valero standings just the same. And I want to mention Embroid Me scheduling. I was just mapping out the other day where I'd like to get around during the holiday season and see some great basketball, not just the league here early, but non-league as well. SVC fans, Embroid Me, 10 Health Drive. That's 774-7400. Make sure you go online, hit the Embroid Me logo, and print your 10% coupon for your trip in there and get all your SVC apparel here at the holiday times. And while I'm talking coupons, make sure you check out the McDonald's coupon on the front page. Right now we are offering the cheddar bacon onion. Jeremy, you tried that one, the cheddar bacon onion?
I'm not big on the cheddar. I like my American cheese.
Whew, I'll tell you, it's a good one. You can, I believe, I don't have that one in front of me. I believe you buy the fry and the drink and you get the sandwich free. So definitely want to take advantage of that throughout the week on your lunch hour there when you go to McDonald's. So, all right, let's talk some girls basketball. I was out at the Paint Valley Tuesday night. I tell you what, you just kind of knew going out there that it was going to be a dogfight. It was going to be one of those maybe first of 28 or 29, 30 wins the game. And it kind of started that way early in the game. Points hard to come by. And then I think it was 15-9 at halftime, Paint Valley. But the Lady Bearcats getting a little foul trouble. Zane Trace goes to the locker room there, and they kind of have their season right in front of them. I mean, they're already off to a tough start with a tough schedule, and then you're down 15-9. You really had no choice but to come back in this game, or you really kind of put yourself behind the eight ball. And Haley Carl and Kylan Strasball really answered the call. It was Carl in the third quarter, Strasball in the fourth, and just outstanding performance. They come all the way back and end up winning it out there in Bainbridge. After the game, I had a chance to talk to Zane Trace head coach Joe Dunkel. Let's have a listen.
Well, Coach, just real quick, I mean, obviously, just a crazy physical basketball game. I think that's going to kind of be the way it is when Zane Trace and Paint Valley get together. Just your reaction from the game.
Helter skelter, tale of two halves. I mean, you know, 9 points in the first half, which is absolutely pathetic. You know, a lot of that had to do with Paint Valley's defense, 31 in the second half. So I thought that, you know, our girls that we've been expecting to play well the last 3 and 4 games, they showed up tonight. I mean, Haley Carl played well. Kylan Strasball played well, and then we got good minutes off the bench from Alex Chafin.
Well, you kind of led me right into my second question. I really thought, you know, when you think of how your season started, a tough schedule, obviously, and then you're down 15-9, you know, you're in the second half, Haley in the third quarter, then Kylan in the fourth quarter. What kind of different look does your team take on when those two can score the basketball?
When we're attacking the bucket with them two and Joanne, you know, we're getting good looks. Maybe the shots aren't always going in, but we're at least getting good looks. When we're taking the ball back the other way toward the other team's bucket, it's bad news for us. And I thought in the first half that's the way it was. You know, we were catching the ball at 15 foot and dribbling back out to 22. And, you know, we're not the type of team that can do that. You know, we have to be a possession basketball team. And, you know, we got to get 45 to 50 shots up a game. But, you know, they got to be shots that we want to and the people we want taking them.
Real quick, last question. I know Stanford got loose on you in the late third, early fourth on you, but for other than that, you did a really good job on Stout and Stanford. Would you agree that the key to the game was, as bad as offense was in the first half, the key was you only had given up 15 and given you a chance to respond and come back?
Exactly. And I think you've seen two of the big guns that were in foul trouble in Stout and Carl, you know, on and off, 2 and 3 the first half or whatever they had. But, yeah, I mean, that to us, those were the two to stop, and then whoever else got their points after that. And, you know, I'm sure if you talk to Joey, he's going to tell you the same thing. Hey, they got two girls, maybe three that we have to shut down, then the rest of them, if they get their buckets, they get their buckets. So, you know, I just think that, you know, we played well enough to win the second half. But like you said, it was a physical knockdown drag out. And, you know, we were luckily we were the last one standing. It's a tough place to play. Stout's one of the better players in the league, and Joey's done an excellent job with what he's got.
Well, just an incredible win. Congrats, and best of luck up at Westfall Saturday.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
Well, you heard me mention up at Westfall Saturday. Let's just kind of go ahead and fast forward to Saturday. They go up there, and again, a really, really nice performance from Haley Carl as well as Strasball. Joanne Saltz adds an 8-for-10 performance from the free throw line, and they get two huge road wins this week that kind of, as you heard us talk about a little bit earlier when we talked about it kind of being an hour never week for them, and they really answered the call there. So a huge week for the Lady Pioneers. Well, Jeremy, as I go through all the other girls action here this week, I'm looking at a really versatile Adena team. I had a chance to see them I tried to sit down floor level the other night and just was amazed at with Huntington's 13, 14-year-old younger kids with just the older kids of Adena and just the physicality and the great fundamental defensively that they play with. Coach Cox has such versatility and so many weapons to play with. It's a pretty solid week for Uniota. I know they struggled a little bit in the first half, but from listening to you talk there, I know you were impressed with Paint Valley. Southeastern gets two wins. Piketon loses Aaliyah Pelfrey to an injury earlier in the week. Timetable a little unknown, but obviously that hurts. And then Huntington with a nightmare schedule is another headline I was looking at here. They played Uniota, Oak Hill, and Adena in a 5-day stretch. Yeah. So as we get into some of the girls' discussion here before we go to the fast break, what would just some of the headlines that jump out at you, or how would you summarize the week in the SVC?
Well, you know, certainly Huntington's got to be excited that that part of their schedule is over. And, you know, with Southeastern, just impressed. You see them battle back, and they opened up, you know, having to play Edina and Uniota right off the bat. And, you know, they obviously learned from their experiences and were able to put a game plan together and execute and you know, show that toughness it takes to scratch out a couple victories. So that was impressive to me. You know, but my headline is probably just Paint Valley not being able to get over the hump. Just how close they were in the way that they prepared and the way they executed initially and gave themselves a chance to win at Zane Trace and then turn around and did the same thing. I mean, what they were able to do defensively against Uniota and just make Alexis overly uncomfortable and really just take all rhythm out of the Uniota offense. It was impressive. And all the while, Stout and Stanforth were driving to the basket, and they were, you know, Uniota could not stop them from getting the basket, and they were on the free throw line the whole first half. Just very impressed with them. And if they could have just gotten, you know, a couple perimeter shots from the other players, or maybe just been able to stay out of foul trouble in the second half, it just seemed like the fatigue and the wear and tear on Stanforth and Stout having to do so much for them really took its toll as the game wound down.
Well, I think you make a good point there. You heard Coach Dunkel talk about Stout and Carl and foul trouble, but to be honest, the difference is there, as good a player as Stout is, the depth of the starting five and maybe even a few bench people for Zane Trace kind of allowed them to withstand that, where it's very difficult on Paint Valley to play without their leader. And then with some of the depth of Westfall and some of these other teams, it's just going to be an interesting race as we get going there in the middle. Real quick before we get in the fast break, with you being, I know you talked to me a lot about, you were real impressed with the way Paint Valley guarded in the first half against Uniota. I had a chance to watch Dean, and I tell you, I go back a couple years to that Zane Trace team that I did the article on the website, and a lot of people have followed the website for a while remember me praising them. I'm telling you, this Edina team's really, really good defensively. What do you see? We're going to talk about X factors and different things later in the Edina Uniota matchup in the fast break. But with that showdown coming early January, what are some of the things that maybe jump out, Jeremy, in terms of the matchup of the Edina defense against an improving Uniota offense? But maybe from listening to you talk, maybe not quite there yet, or no? How would you say that?
Well, yes, I think you know, just from Tuesday to Saturday, anybody that watched Uniota play, you know, Tuesday, you know, they were fabulous. They executed. They had, you know, four or five girls involved. They did some nice things, shared the ball, really used the whole floor. You know, sometimes, especially with girls, they'll get one dimensional. They'll get all left side or all right side offensively. And, you know, they don't have that balance because they're not reversing the ball or they're not really involving enough players. And they really were scoring from all over the place on Tuesday night. On the flip side, you know, that wasn't there. Paint Valley zone really gave them fits and kind of made them one-sided and perimeter-oriented, and they had a hard time, you know, moving the ball and getting the shots that they wanted. So, you know, I think maybe the most dangerous thing is the fact that Uniota has had a lot of diversity with their opponents from, you know, big and strong teams, seeing zones, seeing, you know, junk defenses, if you will. And they've got some tough games coming up before that January matchup.
They do.
So you know, it might be a little bit early to say, but that there's certainly a lot of things that Edina can do that can cause them problems.
Well, it's going to be a lot of fun. I know that's coming up early January there. Jeremy, let's take a look at our C&K Athletic Equipment Fast Break. And fans, as you hear me say all the time, Jeremy will take the lead and I will follow up. So without further delay, let's get out and transition. Let's go to the girls' Fast Break.
Just like the boys, let's look back at the Edina Sports Medicine SVC leaders. What jumped out at you when looking through the numbers on the girls' side?
For me, shooting percentages, starting out with the free throw line, you know, not seeing the girls from Paint Valley on that list, even though I know they're getting the line an awful lot. Again, just kind of maybe points to the fatigue that shows up. from having to do so much and not being able to execute at a high percentage from free throw line. And on the flip side, Adina having 5 of the top 8 in field goal percentage. And then you throw a 6th, Michelle Ackley is the top 3-point shooter in the league, which really just gives some balance and efficiency to the Warriors that you know, the other teams in the conference don't seem to have.
Well, Jeremy, I guess you kind of point me to something I didn't look at there. I mean, obviously, I knew Adina's versatility is just silly, really. I mean, Grigsby and Cooper, I think, are in every stat category, if I'm not mistaken. So Coach Cox obviously does have maybe advantages that other coaches just simply don't have. But the thing that caught my mind was some of the field goal attempts of our great scorers. I was really proud to see Alexis Overly creating her shot a little bit more. I know last year I was critical of that in her rookie season. Now she's leading the league in scoring and really able to create her own shot. And then you'd mentioned Charlene Stout. I was amazed what she is averaging, considering she's still shooting 50% from the floor. So, as you say, a little bit with the fatigue, probably needing to be a little bit more selfish at times, as well as staying forth and then converting at the line.
After Zane Trace survived road tests at Paint Valley and Westfall this week, are you ready to give them the third spot at 10-4, just like a year ago?
I think I'm going to stick to my 5 loss prediction from last week. You know, although I do think that the tougher non-league schedule that Zane Trace has played might be a factor in them being able to survive those teams behind them.
I guess, why not? I mean, I tell you what, they're impressive. I'll say the man-to-man, they just challenge every dribble, every pass, every catch, and it just makes it really difficult on the bottom half of the league. And Jeremy, you said it well in terms of some of these teams maybe not getting a third, fourth, fifth kid involved and not being able to reverse the ball side to side and do a lot of different things. They come out and they have something that they're going to take away, and they take it away. And if Carl and Strasball are now coming on offensively the way they are, why not? 10-4 is very
looking at the
possible.
Valero standings halfway through the first round, do you see a team's position that surprises you in some way?
Again, you know, you talked a lot about Paint Valley and Westfall just not being able to show the consistency to improve their place in the standings. But Southeastern, you know, has been the beneficiary at this point. They started out with their 2 tough losses, as we talked about earlier, to Adina and Unioto that first week, and they bounced back with the 2 wins this week. And you know, you have to be excited from their standpoint that they have a good opportunity to be 500, maybe at the halfway point.
Well, I think it'll be interesting to see if teams continue to beat up on each other, especially with Aaliyah Pelfrey out now at Piketon. That gives that team a different look. I mean, Aaliyah's a kid averaging real, real close to a double-double. And you look at Huntington beating Paint Valley, but then Paint Valley beating Piketon, and then you know, Westfall not being able to beat them. And you know, it's all over the place. You still have a Southeastern Paint Valley head-to-head matchup coming up that's going to be a big one, and then Paint Valley and Westfall still have to play. So right now, I guess if I'm going on where they're at, I'd have to say Southeastern. But again, I think we need a 2 or 3 more games to really get a consistent read.
Looking ahead at the Unioto Adina Showdown on January the 5th, what do you think will be the deciding factor?
Well, you know, we touched on this a little bit earlier, you know, and some of the problems that Adina can create for the Shermans. Maybe look at the other end of it, some of the problems that Unioto can create for Adina. I certainly think that you know, although Adina might have the edge in the scrimmage area defensively, Unioto can certainly stretch the floor and make Adina uncomfortable in making them play the game, you know, from inline to inline. Also, Unioto's length really could affect more shots than what the Warriors are used to. That's just something that I've noticed, that the ability of Torrey Cox and of Hannah Nelson really to change the shots in the paint. So, you know, the one thing that I know for sure is the atmosphere is going to be fantastic January 3rd in Frankfort, and it's likely to be decided by the 1-point and the 3-point baskets, if you ask me.
Well, I think the free throw line is a big thing here. One thing I mentioned earlier is Adina, great defensively, but what impresses me is how well they defend without fouling. And I think Unioto is going to have to find a way to get some easy points. That's why I would say transition defense is going to be really key both ways. And then you always look for an X factor, a role player. I know last year it was Michelle Ackley. I think she had 18. Comes in averaging about 7 or 8, scores 18. The next time around, no role player really on either side went off, but the difference that night was just simply the performance of Grigsby. So obviously going to be a great game, looking forward to it. And I just think it's going to be the team that can get out in front early to where that coach can dictate the tempo in their favor just a little bit more. Fans, Jeremy and I always enjoy hearing from you all over Southern Ohio, really. The SEO Preps and JJ Huddle, SEO NEK Preps is a growing forum as well. We get several comments. We can only get to a few here this week, but I continue to bank those for future shows. And Jeremy, one thing we had this week come into us from down around, I believe, the South Webster area. Three or four questions, so I thought I'd pick out one here and then and kind of bank the other ones. But it was saying on our scheduling discussion, it was saying what coaches look for in the non-league, because they were talking. We'd been talking for fans that maybe haven't been with us. If you haven't been with us, you can go to the DBK website, check out all of our past shows. You can also subscribe by putting your email in the subscribe box and then just following some directions off of a future email that'll come. But Jeremy, when a coach goes to schedule in the non-league, we've already talked maybe about the level of opponent, but what are some of the other factors that maybe a coach would look at when they go to fill that part of their schedule?
Well, you know, something that we've talked a lot about scheduling and, you know, on the air and off the air. But, you know, some people might not understand that depending on the school where you are, you know, the coach may not have the ultimate say in what the schedule looks like.
Right.
That may very well be done by the athletic director. It just kind of depends on where you're at and, you know, how experienced you are and how long you've been there. And the same goes for your AD. But, you know, from a coach's perspective, you know, we've mentioned before how important it is to look at your team, look at where you are, look at your enrollment and decide, you know, what percentage of my schedule do I want to challenge myself? What percentage of my schedule, you know, outside of the league, do I need to make sure I have, you know, two or three games that I pretty much know that I'm going to win on most nights, and really sort it out that way and look at the big picture and then break it down.
Well, I agree with you. Some other factors that I maybe had come to mind, you'll hear some coaches maybe want to play teams because they're in a tournament draw. Maybe you get put off to a tournament draw where you're not in with a lot of league coaches, so you like to have that head-to-head. Especially if you think you're capable of doing really well in your sectional. Some people will tell you they like to play a mixture of styles or a mixture of teams from different areas. And then obviously when the athletic directors get involved and you think of atmospheres and gates, you're going to want a geography comes into play. So those are all the different factors that go in. Now that there's 22 games in a league like the SVC is going to have 8, I think you're going to see some different philosophies take over. And real quick, I hate not to get to this again this week, Jeremy. We missed it last week, talking about the House Bill 143 and the connection back to the volunteer talk that we had in the fall. And in the fall, we talk so much about how hard it is to get people even capable now of volunteering their time for you and how much money it takes and the classes and all that. What I wanted to ask you is, now that this is starting to affect the officials and there's more and more responsibility on officials to overlook the game, as well as coaches and then getting trainers involved, just the harder the guidelines and regulations get, do you think we're starting to enter a time where you're going to have less people that want to get involved in officiating and coaching and helping young kids?
Well, we are already at that point, in my opinion. It's a topic that, you know, I've been in discussions with people, whether it's been administrators, school administrators, coaches, in officiating meetings. One of the reasons that I got into officiating is I had a former college professor and then, you know, John Darrow, who was heads up the Jackson chapter of officials, you know, really talked to me on numerous occasions about, hey, you know, you're not coaching anymore. We need some young guys that understand the game, that people in the area know, played the game, coached the game, understand the game. We need you to get involved because we're really at a risk of having a huge shortage. And, you know, you see that in coaching too. You see tons of schools where all their coaches are not teachers, you know, because right. you see the teachers understanding how much goes into to their day. Maybe they're just not willing anymore to have that jurisdiction, so to speak,
right.
extend to after school hours and never get the mental break of, hey, you know, I need some time where I'm not responsible for somebody else's kid and all that goes with that. You know, where 20 years ago, 25 years ago, whatever, you really only had to worry about doing what was right. And if you trusted that you were doing what was right, you know, you had the confidence that everybody would see that. And that's just not enough anymore. The liability has become a huge deal.
Well, really good stuff from the fans this week. You heard me throughout the show put out the phone number 740-569-3254. Let us know your thoughts on anything and everything SVC sports or high school sports in general, and love to get you involved in the show. You can, of course, still use the website email, and then you can look me up there on Facebook, Shane Combs SVC Sports Zone, or on Twitter as well. So until next time, for the great people at Triple Crown Family Fun Center, for DBK Media Services, and for my co-host Jeremy Ward, this is Shane Combs wishing you a Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year, and reminding you to keep visiting SVCSportsZone.com, where we are 100% SVC, 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk, and visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose, Yuletide carols being sung by